Chapter 9. Debt. History's Unlearned Lesson. The only thing new in the world is the history we don't know. Harry S. Truman. Historically, the financialization of society has always been a symbol that a nation's economic position has entered a phase of deterioration. William Wallman and Ann Kolomaska, The Judas Economy, 1997. The lesson of history is that we don't learn the lessons of history. Thomas G. Donlan, Barron's, 2005. Because the past repeats only in general resemblance, there is always something different, something new. This truth, together with the usual effects of the passage of time, makes it easy for later generations to dismiss any awkward precedents. And so it has been with the demobilization of manufacturing and embrace of debt in the contemporary United States. Like other leading world economic powers, we tell ourselves we are special, unique, sui generis, and God's chosen nation, the new people of the covenant. Economic as well as political and religious smugness threads through each historical sequence. A 17th century Spaniard enthused, "Let London manufacture those fine fabrics, Holland her chambrays, Florence her cloth, the Indies their beaver and vicuna, Milan her brooches, India and Flanders their linens, so long as our capital can enjoy them." The only thing it proves is that all nations train journeymen for Madrid, and that Madrid is the queen of parliaments, for all the world serves her, and she serves nobody. A similar Dutch conceit was sculpted into the decorative exterior of the great Amsterdam town hall, begun in the glory year of 1648, which showed that city receiving the tribute of four continents, Europe, Africa, Asia, and North America, while a Dutch atlas supported the globe on his back. In Britain, economist W.S. Jevons caught the similar self-assurance of the Victorian era. The plains of North America and Russia are our cornfields. Chicago and Odessa are our granaries. Canada and the Baltic are our timber forests. Australia contains our sheep farms, and in Argentina and on the western prairies of North America are our herds of oxen. Peru sends her silver, and the gold of South Africa and Australia flows to London. The Hindus and Chinese grow tea for us, and our coffee, sugar, and spice plantations are all in the Indies. Spain and France are our vineyards, and the Mediterranean our fruit garden. Not anymore, of course. Few contemplate Madrid. The Dutch Atlas has put down his lonely burden, and the sun has set on the British Empire. The recent echoes of yesteryear's smugness come from the fanfares of American empire, so popular before the occupation of Iraq fomented such disillusion. And still, conductors of the orchestra of American hubris wave star-spangled batons, and the chorus still resounds. Washington rules. The world manufactures for the United States, and our current account deficit reflects nothing more than global anxiety about investing in U.S. prosperity. Who knows? The Treasury may even be planning a statue of an American consumer supporting the world on his back. However, if pride goeth before a fall, cocksureness about the manageability of U.S. public and private indebtedness may as well, given threats that range from debt crises to currency humiliations. Crippling indebtedness is like the ghost of leading world economic powers past, a familiar Shakespearean villain come to stalk the current hegemon.